Deuteronomy chapter 11. Love the Lord your God and keep his requirements, his decrees, his laws, and his commands always. Remember today that your children were not the ones who saw and experienced the discipline of the Lord your God, his majesty, his mighty hand, his outstretched arm, the signs he performed and the things he did in the heart of Egypt, both to Pharaoh, king of Egypt, and to his whole country. What he did to the Egyptian army, to its horses and chariots, how he overwhelmed them with the waters of the Red Sea as they were pursuing you, and how the Lord brought lasting ruin on them. It was not your children who saw what he did for you in the desert until you arrived at this place, and what he did to Dathan and Abiram, sons of Eliab, the Reubenite, when the earth opened its mouth right in the middle of all Israel and swallowed them up with their households, their tents, and every living thing that belonged to them. But it was your own eyes that saw all these great things the Lord has done. Observe, therefore, all the commands I am giving you today, so that you may have the strength to go in and take over the land that you are crossing the Jordan to possess, and so that you may live long in the land that the Lord swore to your forefathers to give to them and their descendants, a land flowing with milk and honey. The land you are entering to take over is not like the land of Egypt from which you have come, where you planted your seed and irrigated it by foot as in a vegetable garden. But the land you are crossing the Jordan to take possession of is a land of mountains and valleys that drinks rain from heaven. It is a land the Lord your God cares for. The eyes of the Lord your God are continually on it from the beginning of the year to its end. So if you faithfully obey the commands I am giving you today, to love the Lord your God and to serve him with all your heart and with all your soul, then I will send rain on your land in its season, both autumn and spring rains, so that you may gather in your grain, new wine, and oil. I will provide grass in the fields for your cattle, and you will eat and be satisfied. Wellington R. Burt was a former mayor of Saginaw, Michigan. He also served as a state senator in Michigan prior to his death in 1919. He was a wealthy man, having earned millions in the industrial field. At the time of his death, he had an estimated worth between $40 and $90 million. His later years in life, he lived all alone in a large mansion with only his servants. He was estranged from his family and his friends. As bizarre as his later years were, his last will and testament was even more bizarre. In his will, he left the condition that none of his wealth was to be shared with any of his descendants until 21 years after the death of his last grandchild. His last grandchild died at the age of 92 in 1989. Can you imagine that scene? Can you imagine some of the other grandkids, like, just watching for him to die? That meant the last year, millions of Burt's money would finally be dispersed amongst the remaining descendants. The estate was estimated in total of $100 to $110 million. It was split between 12 descendants, weighted based on age and seniority. They included three great-grandchildren, seven great-great-grandchildren, and two great-great-great-grandchildren. The youngest beneficiary was 19, and the oldest was 94. In the end, 30 of Burt's descendants, including children and grandchildren, missed out on the inheritance because they were ineligible or died before the will's conditions were met. Burt's legacy is mixed. Some viewed him as a wealthy tycoon who was extremely generous to the places and areas where he lived, particularly in Michigan. Yet some view him as a bitter old man who allowed family scuffles to fuel revenge and thus cutting several children and grandchildren from receiving his wealth. My father was not a wealthy man in terms of possessions or money. My brother and sister didn't fight over things my dad left behind. He didn't leave us much in regards to possessions. But you've heard me tell you time and time again that he did leave us something. He left us a lot. He left us much when it came to integrity and honesty, hard work, service, and faith. And as we speak, I am not a wealthy man, but I am hoping and praying that as we speak and as I stand before you, that I am building up a cache of spiritual blessings, such as love, service, respect, kindness, faithfulness, joy, patience, peace, hope, forgiveness, grace, gentleness, and self-control. Not sure I will have $100 million for my children, grandchildren, or great-grandchildren to fight and fuss over. But I sure do pray and hope that this cache of spiritual blessings will be received and shared amongst all my descendants. Knowing that when it comes to these spiritual blessings, there is no limit. That's what I want to be known for. That's what I want my children's grandchildren to talk about. If it so happens that I leave this earth before my children, I hope that when they're talking to the minister who would officiate my funeral, I hope that they can talk to that minister and tell him a lot about what I have left as a legacy. And I hope that my children can share with the one who officiates my funeral that he left us love and grace and joy and peace and gentleness. What we have been exploring these past several weeks is an address of the epidemic of fatherlessness in our homes. We have been addressing it with spiritual courage. We have used the film Courageous as a backdrop for our discussion. At the heart of the matter is the welfare of our children. At the focal point, our fathers, but everyone in the body of Christ is a target. We are encouraging everyone in here to be intimately involved in changing the culture of fatherlessness, or at least participating in the healing process of many children. In this morning's text, we are reminded of the Lord's idea when it comes to children. As Moses spoke to the Israelites, he shared with them the mind and heart of God. Contained within the heart and mind of God was the transfer of wealth. Now again, the wealth that I speak of is not necessarily gold coin or an estate. God wanted the transfer of wealth of experience. That's why Moses says, love your God and keep his laws always. In other words, know God, love God, and follow God. Your primary concern on this earth before fathering or mothering, before being a wife, before being a husband, before being an employee, is to give your life to the Lord. Jesus would say, love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, and mind. Paul would say, present your bodies as a living sacrifice. If you have children, then you are well on your way in this life if you make it a priority in your life to follow Jehovah and to give him your entire life. If you are a parent, you are well on your way to know intimately the story of God. Moses tells the Israelites, remember, your children were not the ones who saw and experienced the discipline of God. He was speaking of the Egyptian bondage and the story of the Israelites being oppressed in Egypt. It was the older generations that witnessed the hand of God as they escaped the pursuing Egyptians. It was the older generation that witnessed the Red Sea splitting apart. It was the older generation who heard the promise of receiving a land flowing with milk and honey. It was the older generation that heard the promise of receiving this land, that they were going to take possession of that land. It was the older generation that God sees as transferring the wealth of experience to children, the wealth of faithfulness to children, and the wealth of serving God with the totality of the heart to their children. It's not just a suggestion, church. It's expected that parents will tell the story of God to their children. It is expected that parents will tell their children that the Lord is God. It is expected that the parents will show their children what it means to keep their hearts in tune with God's story and thus allow God to write their story. Again, Deuteronomy 11, verses 18 through 21, it says, fix these words of mine in your hearts and minds. Tie them as symbols on your hands and bind them on your foreheads. Teach them to your children, talking about them when you sit at home and when you walk along the road, when you lie down and when you get up. Write them on the door frames of your houses and on your gates, so that your days and the days of your children may be many in the land that the Lord swore to give your forefathers, as many as the days that the heavens are above the earth. Church, that's leaving an inheritance, a real inheritance. But don't just listen to me. Listen to the children. Perhaps we need to pause a few moments and listen to what children desire from their parents and fathers. Listen to these children.
Dad,
hey Dad.
I want to be rich and good looking.
I want to be rich and good looking.
I'll need you to challenge me.
I'll need you to challenge me
to be rich in good works.
To be rich in good works.
I'll be focused on building a career at all costs.
I'll need you to show me how to put my family ahead of work.
I'll seek my own comfort and joy.
I'll seek my own comfort and joy.
I need you to teach me to honor God.
I'll need you to teach me to honor God
with my time and resources.
I'll want to avoid hard conversations.
I'll need you to show me how to speak the truth
of love
in love.
I'll find myself wanting to please the crowd.
I'll need you to remind me that I should obey God.
That I should obey God.
I'll look for happiness in many different places.
I'll need you to show me that joy is found in following Christ.
I'll want to treat girls how the world tells me to.
I'll need you to show me how to honor them with all my actions.
I'll find myself stuck in bad habits.
I'll need you to show me the way out.
I'll need you to show me the way out.
I'll need you, Dad.
I'll need you, Dad.
I need you, Dad.
I need you, Dad.
To point me toward Christ when no one else will.
To point me to Christ when no one else will.
These are our children speaking of what they need and what they desire. And they don't just need parents and fathers to just tell them what to do. They need parents and fathers to teach them. They don't need parents and fathers that just speak and teach. They need parents and fathers that will show them. The Israelites of old saw all the mighty works of God, the mighty hand of God working in everything. And the expectation from God's own lips was that they would embody the mighty hand of God, the mighty works of God, and that they would transfer that wealth of experience of what they saw, what they witness and how in response to what they witness, they now serve this great and powerful God. And there was expected to transfer that wealth of experience to their children. So cute, so honest, so innocent, these kids. Well, some of you might say they were reading scripts. They were told what to say. That's a fair point. So I asked Justin to ask some of the teens here to respond to the question, what do you need from your parents? What do you desire? Yes, some of them said, I want more freedom. I want more cell phone minutes. I want the new iPad. Where are we on? 6 now. I want more leniency. Yeah. They want flexibility with the rules. But listen to what else our teens are saying. One said, I would say I need love and support from my parents and just the knowledge that they will always be there for me. Also, advice is good too, in parentheses, even though it's not always appreciated at that moment. Somebody else said, I want trust from my parents. I want them to know that I am not a bad kid and that they can trust me in where I'm going and doing. Also, I miss hanging out with my dad. Someone else wrote, I need their love and support. I need them to listen to me and try to understand. Like sometimes I feel like they are listening to me with a closed mind, and that's just as good as not listening. One teen wrote this, my father left me and my mother when I was 1 year old. Now I'm 17 and haven't seen him since. And according to my stepsister, he lives in the area. So it wouldn't be hard for me to see him, but it doesn't happen. My mom remarried while I was in the second grade, and I got a step-parent adoption in the third grade and had my last name changed to what it is now to match the families. I always wonder what it's like to have a family that's together or the feeling to know both of your parents or why you look the way you do. Because all of my friends' families are still together. And I find myself getting jealous of their family lives often. But at the same time, I'm thankful that my dad now did come into my life, and I consider him a dad and a father to me because he's always been there for me, whether I'm trying to get better at a sport, learn something in school, or just need a person to hang out with. And that's what being a parent is to me. It's not who you came from, but it's who accepts and loves you. And all we ever want or need is that feeling of being loved. And sometimes, with as hectic as everyone's life gets, that feeling is expressed enough so we begin to feel unloved at times. Then another team wrote, I don't really know what I want from parents. I've seen what other people get from their parents, and while some of it I want, some of it I don't. It's different when you live with someone else's parents. Since I didn't grow up with a dad, I really don't know what I would want from one. Most likely I would want guy time. I don't get that at all. I don't have someone to guide me on certain situations, and I'm lost on some things. It's hard to live in a world not having a father because I don't know really how to act with fatherly figures. It's just hard sometimes. Church, these are real words coming from the hearts of our teens here. Me telling you what your kids are saying might be helpful, But ideally, these are conversations you as parents need to be having with your children. With regards to meeting the spiritual needs of your children, it is simply time that men and women step up and stand up for families. Church, who here wants to leave an inheritance? An inheritance that is made up of a wealth of experience, a wealth of your relationship with God. Will you take a stand? Take a stand like the men did in the movie Courageous. In the concluding scene of that movie, and I ask that you forgive me if you haven't watched the movie, there is a bit of a spoiler in the scene, but I want us to witness what this man of God says as he makes his call to other men. And while we've been talking to men primarily, I say that this is a call for both men and women to step up and to stand up. And when the question is asked, who will take responsibility for the children in your home, you respond with, I will. Who's going to respond to the kid in his letter that says, I don't have parents, I don't have a fatherly figure? Someone says, who's going to step up and stand up? It's going to be men in here that's going to say, I will. Let's watch this clip.
As a law enforcement officer, I've seen firsthand the deep hurt and devastation that fatherlessness brings in a child's life. Our prisons are full of men and women who have lived recklessly after being abandoned by their fathers, wounded by the men who should have loved them the most. Many of these children now follow the same pattern of irresponsibility that their fathers did. While so many mothers have sacrificed to help their children survive, they were never intended to carry the weight alone. We thank God for them. But research is proving that a child also desperately needs a daddy. There's no way around this fact. As you know, earlier this year, my family endured the tragic loss of our 9-year-old daughter, Emily. Her death forced me to realize that not only had I not taken advantage of the priceless time I had with her, but that I did not truly understand how crucial my role was as a father to her and our son Dylan. Since her passing, I've asked God to show me through His Word how to be the father that I need to be. I now believe that God desires for every father to courageously step up and do whatever it takes to be involved in the lives of his children. But more than just being there, providing for them, he's to walk with them through their young lives and be a visual representation of the character of God, their Father in heaven. The father should love his children and seek to win their hearts. He should protect them, discipline them, and teach them about God. He should model how to walk with integrity and treat others with respect, and should call out his children to become responsible men and women who live their lives for what matters in eternity. Some men will hear this and mock it or ignore it. But I tell you that as a father, you are accountable to God for the position of influence he has given you. You can't fall asleep at the wheel only to wake up one day and realize that your job or your hobbies have no eternal value, but the souls of your children do. Some men will hear this and agree with it, but have no resolve to live it out. Instead, they will live for themselves and waste the opportunity to leave a godly legacy for the next generation. But there are some men who, regardless of the mistakes we've made in the past, regardless of what our fathers did not do for us. We'll give the strength of our arms and the rest of our days to loving God with all that we are, and to teach our children to do the same. And whenever possible, to love and mentor others who have no father in their lives, but who desperately need help and direction. And we are inviting any man whose heart is willing and courageous to join us in this resolution. In my home, the decision has already been made. You don't have to ask who will guide my family, because by God's grace, I will. You don't have to ask who will teach my son to follow Christ, because I will. Who will accept the responsibility of providing and protecting my family? I will. Who will ask God to break the chain of destructive patterns in my family's history? I will. Who will pray for and bless my children to boldly pursue whatever God calls them to do? I am their father. I will. I accept this responsibility, and it is my privilege to embrace it. I want the favor of God and His blessing on my home. Any good man does. So where are you, men of courage? Where are you, fathers who fear the Lord? It's time to rise up and answer the call that God has given to you, and to say, I will. I will. I will.
In the concluding scene of that movie, a very moving piece, you had men standing to their feet and saying, I will take responsibility. I will be all that God has called me to be. And before all of that, even saying, I will believe in this God who created this earth, who created me. I will believe in this God that has done mighty things throughout the course of history, throughout the course of my lifetime. I will follow Him, and I will lead my kids to Him. That's the responsibility I'm taking as a father. That's the responsibility I'm taking as a minister. That's the responsibility I'm taking as a brother in Christ. So that means however I can be a resource to you and helping you follow God, I'll be that. That means whatever I can do in the life of this young man who wrote very truthfully, painfully and truthfully about his experience of fatherlessness. That means, who's going to be there for you, brother? I will. And maybe there's a young lady that has the same experience, and they need someone in their life for direction. When she asks the question, who's going to be in my life and help me live this faith journey, as painful as it is, rather than point fingers and say, they might, raise your hand and say, I will. Because that's courageous. And that's what it means to leave an inheritance. I want to invite you to consider all the things that we've said over the past several weeks regarding the epidemic of fatherlessness, and how we as a church can influence those who are suffering the ill effects of fatherlessness. I'm inviting you, fathers, to really take seriously the charge and the command to be godly fathers. I'm asking you mothers to take that charge to be a mother seriously. I'm asking you husbands to take that charge to love your wife, Christ, love the church seriously. I'm asking you women to love your husbands. I'm asking us as a church to understand that this is about Ubuntu, that we are, because we all are, we're all in this together, that we are all resources for one another. I'm asking us all to step up, stand up, and be courageous. I'm inviting you in the fall for men on Wednesday nights. We're going to be studying the resolution for men. This isn't the end. This is just the beginning. Women, I'm asking you to continue on this journey as well. Yeah, there may be a day where we'll have a ceremony where I'm going to ask men to pledge to be men of God to be leaders in the home, when we start looking for male leadership in this church, if you're not first a leader at home, you need not apply. It's time for us to stand up and be courageous, church. As we sing this song, this next song, Mighty to Save, as we sing about this God who is so big and so powerful to move mountains, to cause oceans to roar. Oh, if a God could sustain this earth on as mighty stage as that is, oh, he's mighty to save you. He's mighty to intervene in your life right now. He's mighty to intervene in your family right now. I'm just asking you right now to call out to him. Call out to him to save you. Had it not been for the Lord who was on our side, we would have been swallowed up. But blessed be the Lord who would not give us up. If you're not a child of God, you want to give your life to God. You want to call God Father. You want to cry out to him, Abba Father. Profess faith in him. We want to give you that opportunity as well. Let's stand. Let's sing. Let's be courageous.